Blog Let's Talk do it. Radio.
Oh yeah. Oh, 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 oh yeah. That's what. It's Empowerment Saturday. 65 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. It's your main man, Marvin Roan, and the crew. Come to you, man. We got Dr. Bruce. We got motivation, empowerment. We got you. We got me. What you want to join me, folks? Oh yeah. There is no better love. No greater love. Oh yeah. That we said there's no better love. Brothers and sisters, welcome one and welcome all to the Empowerment Hour. It's 365 days of African American. What can we find that at? Right? Just strictly empowering African Americans to become better, to have better communities and better families, to be better in this society, in this culture, in this country, and in the world, wherever we are, right? That great reflection of our ancestors that we've come through chattel slavery, and now we're just in a better position to improve ourselves mentally, physically, emotionally, socially, culturally. It's the experience. It's the African-American experience, right? And we're not just recovering, but we're healing, right? And as you go through the situations that we find ourselves in this country and in this culture, there's some need for some assistance in this society. So we need to help ourselves. How are we going to do that? We intend to do that through the peace concept because our mission is to ensure that the needs of the African-American community are met wherever we are through the development of programs and services that support, inspire, motivate, empower each person, each African-American who is in this country, right? That is in need of support and assistance mentally, physically, emotionally, socially, and culturally. How we do this through the peace concept. Peace. It's an acronym that we're using to say these are the things that our people need. And if you think about them carefully, it's a great way to be able to look at how we can transition ourselves into this society in a better way. So here it is. Politics. That's the P. Politics. We have to have a political agenda. Right? We have to have that agenda that really looks at the American political system and how we can transition to put ourselves in a better place to create institutions that we can define our own reality through, but also to be able to understand how this system works. Right? Okay, y'all free, go. And then we're off. Right? If you don't know the system, how can you work it? And so we're talking about understanding the American system politically. The E is economics, having to understand that the economic system, the capitalistic system, and how we can navigate this system to effectively create institutions that define our own reality, whether that's schools, daycares, right, Fortune 500 businesses, the things that we need to secure our institutions, right, the things that we need to secure the economics that we need that we won't have to strive and steal and beg and borrow, right, that we can have healthy lives for our children, that they can go to schools with books and computers, right, and those institutions that will support them in their confidence and their esteem, right? That is the E, economics. We need money. The A is athletics, health, wellness, fitness, and nutrition. We got to take care of ourselves. We got to learn how to do that, relearn, unlearn, relearn, and unlearn some of the things that we learn in this society and this culture. And as we continue to push back, we get well, we get healthier mentally, physically, emotionally, right? What about your mental wealth and your mental health, right? And how that is so important to your life. Next, and most importantly, is culture. Relevant cultural programs like this one and many, many more that really help us look at examining ourselves and what we need to do to get better at being ourselves, right? Helping our young people to gain confidence in themselves because we know they need it. They need it so desperately. Our people need support. Just go down to any community where African Americans are. A large number, you see the disparities. You'll see the pain. You'll see the suffering. You'll see the sorrow. And we can do something about that with relevant cultural programs like rites of passage programs and programs that help us to heal and help us to be better parents and better family members to support each other in a very positive way. And then lastly, it's a comprehensive education. And we need that. We need that so, so desperately. We need to educate ourselves that we go from transitioning to a place of ignorance, and that just means not knowing, right? Because once we know the system, we know how to navigate the system, we'll be just fine. But we're going to have to do that, and we're going to have to do that collectively and together. Here is our Stan Macklin moment. Man, Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah, man, we got the deck.
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing.
Some of you are probably wondering, why do you play that every week? Because we have to understand how important institutions is or are. Those institutions really define who we are, and the more institutions that we have, the better off we are, the institutions that support our reality, that help us to improve ourselves, right, to motivate and inspire ourselves. Imagine if we had institutions that really created a health, a wellness, and a mental health, and a mental wellness, and emotional wellness for our people, that really empowered them to become the best that they could be, to help them through issues, to resolve the money issue, the financial issues, the personal issues. Those kind of things really matter, and we have to understand how important that is. As we continue to strive, right, we continue to do the work, things will get better once we do the work of working on ourselves, and that is our commitment and our obligation. And now it's time for the Willie Lynch Kwanzaa segment with Brother George. Brother George, you know how to do it. Oh, yeah. Come on in, brother.
Bring it. What?
Brother George.
Yes, sir, brother.
We ain't going nowhere. How you doing, brother? Welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you very much, brother. I'm doing fine. I'm doing fine. All praise due to God. I'm doing fine, brother.
All right. What you got for us today?
Well, today... Kwanzaa principle from the Nguza Saba is Ujamaa, cooperative economics, to build and manage our stores, shops, and our businesses, and to profit from them together. Now, Ujamaa means sharing. What goes around comes around. This is a common one in the African American community, but it is in its most positive sense, it refers directly to the concept of Ujamaa. What we share of our resources, whether time, talent, money, or energy, returns to us as additional resources through which we can creatively improve our situation and progress towards our individual and collective goals. Now, with the Willie Lynch segment, I'm going to read from one of Marcus Garvey's course books, called Message to the People. And I'm going to read on the purpose of institutions. And I had intended on reading this portion when Dr. Bridges was talking about the different institutions that were in our community, in particular the fraternal orders and the Masons and different organizations like that, are the institutions that we have built in the Black community in the past. And Marcus Garvey's course spoke on that, the purpose of institutions. Organized society is always a mass of people, and as such, cannot do anything explicit or by detail by themselves. Hence, the organizing of institutions to do the particular work that cannot be done by the masses as a whole. There are different kinds of institutions in our society, but each institution has its particular function, whether it be the church, college or university, school, hospital, academy, chamber of commerce, fraternity, trade union, literary club, sports club, athletic club, gymnasium, YMCA or YWCA, etc. In our present civilization, no society would be considered functioning properly if such institutions did not exist. Therefore, it is necessary for the Negro to pay close attention to developing the appreciation for institutional life. These are old books, so they still referring to us as Negro back then. It is not necessary or binding that he copies completely the systems, methods, or manners of these institutions, except insofar as they to help him to promote a higher life and in accomplishing the most out of this organized society. It is incumbent upon him that he also have and control his own institutions based upon his own cultural and civilized idealism. As for instance, he may have his own church, but it is not necessary for him to adopt the peculiar articles of faith of the churches of aliens. Race. In other words, if you're going to have an institution, you need to completely control it yourself. And so, Brother Marvin, unless you have a question for me about that, back to you.
All right. Thank you, Brother George. Here's a question. Why, at this point in time, where we are as it exists, why are institutions so important for African Americans or people of color in this country right now?
Well, it's very important because the institutions, a lot of the institutions that we created, we went against what the actual code is for creating institutions. Most of our institutions are hybrid. They're part white and part black. So we do have some of our cultural things in there, but we also have some desires, that Europeans wanted us to teach or to practice in our institutions. And so many of our institutions have to be reconfigured to make them strictly from the Afrocentric perspective. And we need to do that in order to be successful and in order for us to begin to come together as a group, because it's going to be very necessary because of the time that we live in. You know, people are very jealous and they don't like to see you make progress and they don't want to help you make progress. And so when we build a lot of our institutions off of the principle of integration, then we think that, different people want to help us. And it's a lot of people that fight diligently to not help us to accomplish things. But if you take the world into your own hands and you had a power as a people, we've proven that in the past, then you can dictate what your future is. You can dictate jobs, assigning jobs for our young people, and helping them to be successful in their businesses and helping each other to be successful in different ventures that we go into. When we take that into our own hands, and we have the power to do that, brother. So that's my response.
True. I believe that to be true. But it's so important right now that we start to really build and invest our money in the right ways, right? that we understand capitalism, how it works, so we can use those resources to build institutions that define our own reality to help our people help themselves. Man, imagine if we had businesses, right? Fortune 500 companies, right? Automobile companies where we're building our own cars and manufacturing our own cars and our own underwear and our own toothbrushes and toothpaste. Man,
right.
Wouldn't that be a better world? How about that? Anyway, man, Brother George.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for that segment. I appreciate you. And now we're going to move on to, before we get to Dr. Bruce, we want to kind of institute this new portion of the show. So we're gonna use a model. We're going to try Slido.com. So if you have a comment or you have a question, you can just log in to Slido.com. If you go over there and there's a code that you can put in, that's 644458. Put that code in, then you can ask any question to Dr. Bruce or any statement that you want to make, because we got a lot of people listening online and we want you to get involved. So this is the way that you can get involved. Go to Slido.com and put in the code 644458. And if you go to the show page, it's right up there. You can see it. So again, we got people listening across the country and around the world. And if you want to be a part of the show now, you don't have to call in to the call-in line. What you can do is dial, right, the call-in number, 845-277-9250. When the question and answer portion comes, and you're welcome to make a comment or ask a question to Dr. Bruce. Or as the show going on, if you got a comment or a thought or a question for Dr. Bruce, go to Slido, Slido.com. Put in the code 6444. There's 3 4s, 658, and you can be a part of the show. We need to get you to get involved. Ain't it right, Brother George?
Yes, sir. I think that it's an excellent way, you know, for Dr. Bridges to receive questions, because he takes a lot of time and preparation, you know, to speak on the things that he speaks on, and he's very knowledgeable. And I know that there's a lot of us out there that want to ask questions, but maybe we've called in on a call-in line at some point in the past and wasn't able to get through and frustrated with that. Well, with this operation, you can just type in your question either on your phone or on your computer and send it in, and we'll ask Dr. Bridges that question, you know, live, and then he can give you a response to your question. So hopefully, you know, our young people, you know, we use that device, and I mean, it's the sign of the times, because that's how we operate now. You know, so hopefully that'll be taken advantage of, and y'all, you know, will assist us in, you know, growing our listening audience with asking questions and being more, you know, proactive in the conversation with Dr. Bridges, and I think he would greatly appreciate that. Back to you, brother.
All right. Thank you, Brother George. Again, Slido, Slido.com, 6444-34-658. Come on, join us, get involved, and now, without delay, Dr. Bruce is on the way. Here we go. Oh, yeah. Bruce in. Bring it. Empowerment. Bring it, Dr. Bruce. Dr. Bruce, welcome to the show. How are you?
Oh, how am I? I'm tired, Brother Marvin. I'm tired.
Let's see what Dr. Bruce is going to do. Tired, y'all. Yes, sir. He's amazing.
Tired. I just left that fantastic Dynamite on Fire conference with Dr. Lafayette Maxwell over at Shaw University in Durham, North Carolina. That you were supposed to have been on.
Say I was supposed to be on?
Yeah, this is the day that you and your wife were supposed to have been down in North Carolina with us.
Man, we got to talk about that.
Yeah, we'll talk about it, but it was a Dynamite conference, man. You should have, Dr. Maxwell really brought it, and I think Dr. Rogers is listening, and man, I'm going to tell you what Dr. Maxwell made me realize, Brother Marvin and Brother George, and that is that the African-American church could really be the savior for our people in terms of getting our minds back, recapturing our African minds. Dr. Maxwell went through that Bible today, and he talked about Cush and Ethiopia, and he talked about certain scriptures in the Bible that talked about black people, talked about how black people were riding chariots and had roads in Africa back in ancient times. And it's all in the Bible.
We're going to have to get Dr. Maxwell. Maxwell, wherever you are, come and see us. We need this. We need to get it in us.
Yeah,
get it down inside.
Yeah, he's with me.
People.
He's in my presence right now. We listen together.
All right, Dr. Maxwell. We got to get you in so we can get the knowledge to the people.
That's right. Yeah, especially with that Bible. He's good with that Bible. And then I came on behind him. I even told him, I said, I can't hardly follow that. He's too tough for me to hardly follow. I couldn't hardly come behind him. But he's listening on the computer.
All right. Welcome, Dr.
Maxwell. Yeah, he's
listening
on the computer.
And again, keep up the great work. All right, Dr. Bruce.
Okay, what I'm going to do, I'm going to try to push it out as best I can. Like I said, we left for Raleigh earlier this morning because we had to set up all the equipment because we had PowerPoint and we had people on Zoom. So I got up about 5 o'clock this morning. Well, before 5, he picked me up at 6:30. I got up about 5 to be ready for him to drive to Raleigh. So I'm a little tired, but I'm going to do the best I can. And I like your new way of getting the people ask questions, Brother Martin. I like that. I like what you're trying to do. So people won't have to say anything. They can still get the questions in. So I hope that works for some people, you know.
Let me make the announcement one more time before you get started. It's slido.com, S-L-I-D-O.com. All you have to do is put in the code 6444-658 and make your comment known. All right, Dr. Bruce.
Okay, now. Today, you know, I'm starting on page 207 of my book, Recapturing the African Mind. And we've been in a chapter for the last couple of weeks called The Effects of Mind Destruction. And last week we talked about how the holidays that we celebrate really shows the effects of mind destruction on the minds of black people. As usual, you know, I always like to kind of go back over what we talked about the previous week, and I said last week, but I mean week before last. And by the way, I won't get into it now, but after we finish, Brother Marvin, before we take questions and answers from the telephone or from your new Slido, remind me to say something about Brother Akebalon's lecture. I won't get into it now, but remind me to do that if you don't mind. Anyway, so, because I heard about it. So anyway, we talked about the holidays, and we went through all the holidays starting from New Year's Day. Then we went and hit Valentine's Day and asked questions like, who is Cupid? Where did Cupid come from? A little white baby. And shooting bows and arrows, and not our culture and our heritage. And we talked about St. Patrick's Day, black folk wearing green. And then we went on and talked about Easter and how Easter came about and how that's an example, too. And so that's what we've been talking about, the effects of mind destruction on black people. And today we're starting on page 207, and that particular part of the book is called Acceptance of European Culture, Language, and Religion. Okay, I'll repeat that. Acceptance of European Culture, Language, and Religion. And I start off that chapter by saying that the most effective missionaries and colonizers were able to influence the minds of African people by using very simple devices. Understand that African societies felt close to nature and spirituality. Missionaries would connect their ideas of God with African ideas and beliefs in God. And what that means, just explain that a little bit. Missionaries would find out what we believed and what our ideas were, and then they would connect their Eurocentric ideas with ours to make it more palatable or make it more easier for us to accept. And this is also something that we talked about this morning in the workshop, but Dr. Maxwell did a good job on talking about that. And now back to the book. Eventually, through propaganda, the missionaries put forth their Eurocentric belief in the Creator. Now, I then in my next paragraph, I quote Brother Marcus Garvey. And Marcus Garvey had a course that he taught called his course on African philosophy. And Marcus Garvey talked about the effects of European propaganda and its control over the minds of African people. And Garvey discussed the impact of religion as well as literary propaganda. He discussed both literary propaganda as well as religious propaganda. He understood that European propaganda was skillfully devised, and consequently, they were able to control the minds of African people in the whole world. Not all African, and there were cases, though, that I talk about in my book, which I won't go into now, of why some Africans did not accept this European God concept, and they questioned it. And so I talk about that on page 207. Which a person can get and read on their own. And this also reminds me of how Dr. Maxwell and I were talking today about how many of the Sunday school books that were used in black churches, they were actually produced and published by the Southern Baptist Association, I think, out of Nashville, Tennessee. And, of course, they would always have the white images in the little Sunday school books and the little cards they used to give us. I remember that growing up. And they had, and he was saying that he even saw one time a picture in a black church of a white Jesus. And around the white Jesus, he had some lambs. And the lambs were white. And the black lambs were behind the white lambs. They were in the back part of the picture, you see. And that kind of ties into what I understand that Brother Akebalon talked about on last week, about how images can really affect our minds. And since we're talking about that too, I meant to get to you earlier to have you to pull up a song off the internet by a brother by the name of Wali Ali. And he was a follower of W.D. Wallace D. Muhammad. And he wrote and recorded a song called Images. And in that song, he says, I sit in church, yet I don't understand why we pray to a Caucasian man. His hair is blonde and his eyes are blue. Daddy, he just doesn't look like you. And then Wali Ali goes on to say and sing, they say, they call him Jesus, you see, but he really doesn't look like me. And he looks like the slave. Now I know why I feel so low, because he looks like the slave masters of long ago. What is this image I see? What is it saying to me? Are these images are divine, or are they pictures in my mind? It's a song called Images by Wali Ali. And I say that to say how we as people, as Dr. Maxwell also brought out today in his lecture, how we as people have to take the good that any of us offer. Now, Wallace D. Muhammad, I might not have agreed with him on everything, but one thing he did do when he came into the leadership of the Nation of Islam, he started this CRAID program, he called C-R-A-I-D, and it was the, I can't think what that C stood for. Anyway, it was about the eradication of images of divine, destruction of divine images. He said we need to take these white images down off our walls and from our churches because these images had a very devastating effect on our minds. And so all of this, as I'm talking about in my book, is a part of the propaganda. Now, I'm back to my book here, but all this relates. On page 208 to those who have the book, an illustration of what occurs when Africans are not perceptive enough to recognize European propaganda can be found in the poetry of Phyllis Wheatley. And to those people who do not know, I'm giving you a little bit of information still in my book. Phyllis Wheatley was born in 1753 in present-day Gambia, or Ghana, West Africa. People are not really sure. The name of the slave ship upon which Phyllis Wheatley was shackled in 1761 was named Phyllis, from which she gets her name. They name her after the slave ship. So many of you who are familiar with Phyllis Wheatley, an early poet in America, female poet from West Africa, most people don't know how she got her name, but she got her name from the name of the ship. And her last name, of course, came from her slave master, Phyllis from the ship, and Wheatley from the slave master. We're just teaching here, Brother Marvin, on the African Empowerment Association here on this Saturday afternoon here. And I'm going back to the book now. After being sold to a prosperous Boston merchant, John Wheatley, from which she gets her last name, which I just stated, Phyllis was taught by John's wife, Mary. The religious household in which she was reared had a tremendous effect on her young mind. She was taught European classical English, literature, Latin, and, of course, the Bible. A reading, and when we say the Bible, if the Bible had been taught, like my good friend, who I keep missing, I can't get away from it, if it had been taught by Dr. Maxwell, it would have been a different teaching. But she was taught the Bible from a Eurocentric point of view, you see. But the Bible is not a European book. It came from us, translated by us. I talked about King James, which I later on I keep saying we might get into that. But we have been given it from a Eurocentric point of view as a part of the propaganda of Christianity. And John Henry Clark said, I always like to quote Dr. Clark, and I always like to make this statement, and because I can see Clark now, I've heard him say it in person. He said that the white man is the world's greatest propagandist. He takes his propaganda and spreads it around the world, and people are feeding upon that propaganda right now, and that's why we are out of our minds, because our minds are filled with so much propaganda, and John Henry Clark talked about that many years ago. Now, back to Phyllis Wheatley. So, I just mentioned who taught her. She was taught in the household where she was taught. Okay, now, in reading one of Phyllis Wheatley's poems called On Being Brought from Africa to America, shows how her young mind was shaped into just what the slave master intended. Now, I'm going to read a portion of that poem that she wrote, Phyllis Wheatley. Matter of fact, this is the whole poem, short poem. And while I read this poem, Brother Marvin and Brother George, and to those who are tuned in right now to the African American Empowerment Program, I want you to just think about these words that I'm about to read, which are Phyllis Wheatley's words. But I want you to think about how she was out of her mind. She did not have her own mind. Listen very carefully. She says, 'Twas mercy brought me from my pagan land, taught my benighted soul to understand that there's a God, that there's a Savior too. Once I redemption neither sought nor knew. Some view our sable race with scornful eye. Their color is a diabolic dye. Remember, Christians, Negroes, black as Cain, may be refined and joined the angelic train. Now, I'm going to take my time a little bit today, Brother Marvin. I know my words are many. My words are many, but the minutes are few. I know we don't have a long time. My words are many, but the minutes are few. That's original,
take your time,
too, by
bro.
The way. All right. I like that. That makes me feel good when you say take my time. That reminds me of the way I was urging Dr. Maxwell on the day, the way he was urging me on when I got up to do my talk. You know, we do that. Okay, I'm going to take my time. Now, let's go back to the poem. Listen very carefully. And I'm quoting Sister Phyllis Wheatley. 'Twas mercy brought me from my pagan land. Just in that statement, two words. And I wish people were, you know, on the phone and could call in and say something, because I'd like to ask somebody what two words in that first statement written by Phyllis Wheatley would let you know that she's out of her mind. I'm going to read it again. 'Twas mercy brought me from my pagan land. Now, Brother Marvin, I'm going to put you and Brother George on the stand for a minute, since the people don't want to call in, don't want to talk to us. Now, what two words do you hear, either one of you, that will let you know that she was out of her mind?
Pagan land.
That's right, pagan land, and what else? 'Twas what that brought her? I said two words, really four.
Grace. Right?
Pagan land, that's two. 'Twas mercy.
Mercy.
She said it was mercy that brought her from her pagan land. You see? Mercy. She you know when a person receives mercy, you know that's something that they need, that's wanted by them. You see, and then she says, "Taught my benighted soul to understand." What kind of soul? Benighted, B-E-N-I-G-H-T-E-D. I don't mean like a knight at the round table, King Arthur. I'm not talking about King Arthur. My benighted mind to understand. Meaning what? Her mind was dark. Her mind was dark. Ignorance. Falsehood in her mind, you see. Then she goes on to say that there's a God, that there's a Savior too. And then she goes on, once our redemption neither sought nor knew. Some view our sable race with scornful eye. Now, listen to that statement. Some view our sable race, meaning black, sable means black, our sable race with scornful eye. They scorn us because we're black. Their color is a diabolic dye. Now, listen to that now. Their color is diabolic, meaning devilish, satanic dye. The Savior, Satan has taken you over if you are a black person. The color is a diabolic dye. Listen how we would talk. And then she says, remember, Christians, Negroes black as Cain may be refined and join the angelic train. In other words, there's some hope for us through this white Jesus and this white Savior. Redemption, Christians, Negroes. If you become a Christian, you're a Negro, and you're black as Cain, but you may be refined, and you can join the angelic train. And I guess that angelic train is a white angel, too. You see? So all through the poem, brothers and sisters, and to those who are tuned in, you can hear clearly that Phyllis Wheatley was robbed, not only physically taken from Gambia or Ghana, but she also was robbed of her mind, which was more important than her physical body being over here. Because if we saw roots, we realized that Kunta Kinte's body was here, but his mind was down by the Cambi-Bilongo River. And he was being taken out of the woods while he was trained into manhood. And that's where his mind always was. His body was enslaved, but his mind was not enslaved. But Phyllis Wheatley had it twice over. Her body was enslaved, and so was her mind. And today, many of us in the world walking around thinking that we're free, and physically we may be to a certain extent, but you can't take that too far. But either way, our minds are we're out of our minds. So I go on page 209. A human being cannot find a stronger argument for the validity of a white Jesus and for the validation of the doctrines of European Christianity than an argument from a brainwashed African, both on the continent and in the diaspora. Due to the religious club which pounded the very brains out of the minds of Africans throughout the world, pictures of a white Jesus bearing no resemblance to the inhabitants of certain African countries are prominently displayed and vigorously defended. Now, that's on the back of my book, and I wrote that on the back of my book, too, that same statement, because I will never forget an argument that I was in with a brother in the country of Ghana. He was selling pictures to those who are tuned in when I was in West Africa, one of the times I was there. When he was selling pictures, of a white Jesus in a frame in Africa. And I asked him and I questioned him about it. He speaks English, of course. You know, Ghana's an English-speaking country. And so we got into an argument because I was telling him that Jesus should not be white and Jesus was a black man. But he fought me tooth and nail that, you know, verbally, that Jesus was a white man and that his picture was authentic, and that's what Jesus looked like. But it was a big argument. But that's a good example of us being out of our minds. Okay. African people are told about Eurocentric Christian religion by the introduction to it by their parents. This was true on the American plantations, the Caribbean plantations, and in Africa. And it is still true in African and African-American households today. In the United States, African-American families take their children to church before they can read or write. Most of the stories told about religion are mythical, and yet children are expected to believe them because they get confirmation from everyone in the community. Then I go ahead and talk about, and I can remember very clearly myself having the white images in the Sunday school book, and so everything is kind of handed down to our parents, But I recognize today that if preachers, ministers, pastors, apostles, whatever they want to call themselves, are in the pulpits on Sunday, they could turn our people around with the knowledge if they could use that Bible as a way of waking us up. Because the nutrients, the facts, the nutrients, the nutrition, it's there, but it has to be pulled out and given to the people in the right way, and they can wake up. You can teach history. You can teach science there. You can teach mathematics through the Bible, and you can talk about how it all came from the heads of black people. You see, so I want to just mention that. This early training of acceptance of European Christianity throughout a person's life extends beyond religion into politics, economic socialization, and other aspects of life. Lack of development of reasoning capacity makes acceptance habitual. And then I go on talking about the development of an insane system of elitism that we also have that we got from the plantations. And and we noticed, too, that the one book that they gave us on the plantation was the Bible, but they didn't expect us to use the Bible like Nat Turner did. They didn't expect us to use the Bible like Denmark Vesey did. They didn't expect us to use the Bible like Sister Harriet Tubman and Sister Sojourner Truth did. They didn't expect us to use it that way, but if we would use it that way, because that's what it is, as a matter of fact, and I keep going back to this excellent conference that I went to today, there was a brother from Washington, D.C., who read gave some information about Howard Thurman. And when he was talking about Howard Thurman, he talked about the fact that Jesus was really a revolutionary. He was out of the oppressed people. He was the people who had their backs against the wall, the hungry people. And he was us, just like us. So, but that's not the way it's been given to us. Okay, so that's basically... I give good examples on page 211, and I'll read something here. Like the behavior based on color distinction, language is an early indication of the effects of mind destruction on Africans. Writing and speaking the language of the colonizers was a requirement for the colonized people. Ngugi wa Thiong'o, a scholar from Kenya, writes about the incorporation of European language in the curricula of the schools in Malawi, a country in West Africa. And he says, the president, I want you to listen very carefully now, this is from a book called Decolonizing the African Mind, similar to my title, but it's called Decolonizing the African Mind. On page 19 of Ngugi wa Thiong'o's book, he says this, and I quote him, the president has instructed that Latin should occupy a central place in the curriculum. Students must have had some Latin in their academic background. Dr. Banda has often said that no one can fully master English without knowledge of languages such as Latin and French. So in other words, he's saying that they require in Malawi that people learn Latin. And then he goes further to say, for good measure, no Malawians or people of Malawi is allowed to teach at the academy. Listen very carefully to this now. This is interesting. He said that no Malawian is allowed to teach at the academy, meaning the university. None is good enough, and all the teaching staff has been recruited from Britain. Only white people teach at this particular school in the academy in Malawi. Then he goes on to say, a Malawian might lower the standards, or rather the purity of the English language. And then Wa Thiong'o says, can you get a more telling example of hatred of what is national and the servile worship of what is foreign, though dead. So he's saying that Malawians are not good enough to teach themselves. They must bring the people from Britain to teach them English. And because of a black person teaching at the black school in Malawi would lower the standards, you see. So we're not even good enough to teach ourselves, is what they're saying. If that's true, a lot of us wouldn't be anywhere in this country today, coming from these Negro schools and small one-room schools with a pot-belly stove in them, and where no heat sometimes in the winter, no air in the summertime, and having to wait until we got the crops in before we can even start school. Started late, finished late, and cold rooms and hot rooms in the summertime. And also at the same time, the books that we did have were the secondhand books that came from the white folks' schools. And I remember myself down in the third grade, my spelling bee had names and all kinds of stuff written all in it that white people had written, but they sent them over to the black schools, you see. So if we're not good enough to teach and train ourselves, then look at us now. So we must have been doing some good. Okay, now I'm going again to the book. This attitude towards African language and thought being substandard was promoted by pronouncements of the so-called European scholars. One such scholar, Robert Bennett Bean, in the American Journal of Anatomy, Volume 5, in September of 1906, discusses the difference between the Caucasian and the Negro brain. Bean concludes that the Negro is inferior due to heredity and believes that there is no need to try to elevate him by education or otherwise. Now, for those who want to follow it up, there's the book was called Some Racial Peculiarities of the Negro Brain. So he's saying that the Negro brain, you know, you just can't elevate it. It's hereditarily or genetically, or we are born inferior to them. And white people were putting out this kind of information, and it was considered to be science. But those of us who understand, we call it pseudoscience. We call it lies. We call it falsehood, you see. But they put it out as science. And we go on. In addition to imposing languages on Africans, the European colonizers' conflicting interpretation of African languages added to the divisiveness and confusion. And Nguji Wa Thiong'o again, and in an example on page 22 of his book, Decolonizing the African Mind, he uses terms like a vacillating psychological makeup, chameleon, and identity crisis to describe the impact of the oscillation between the rivaling imperialist bourgeoisie and the colonized people. You see, so just trying to show you here how imperialism through the missionaries and their propaganda of its ideologies introduced writing to many African languages. It was necessary that the biblical message of subservience, the administrative orders for labor and taxes, and the military and police orders for killing recalcitrants. In other words, if you were stubborn and didn't want to go by their rules and regulations, they would kill you. And much of this information reached the native messengers as directly as possible. And so imperialism really did a job on us in America as well as in Africa. Now, because young Africans and African Americans were taught to see the world through European eyes, they associate languages of Africa with something less than or incorrect. For example, African Americans have often heard about teachers and parents say things like, please speak proper English. Please speak proper English. You all know you've heard it. In this way, African Americans are unconsciously and innocently molding succeeding generations to be European. The minds of African people have been placed so much in the box of Europe and white America that it sounds strange when they step out of the box and break those imposed rules of language, pronunciation, and thought. Consequently, they are castigated and criticized. And I want to speak on that for a minute away from my book. We know when we are growing up, and even today, if we get a verb out of place or say something out of our culture, street language, and we bring it into so-called academic place, people don't like that. And even in Jamaica today, Jamaican Africans in Jamaica are beginning to realize that there's nothing wrong with them having what they call patois, P-A-T-O-I-S. In other words, speaking the way that they speak in their communities, and they don't have to always speak just like, as we say, the king or the queen's English. There's nothing wrong with the main thing that we need to worry about as people is communication. Are we communicating? Are we getting through? But just because you split a verb or you don't dot an I and don't cross a T, that has nothing at all to do with your intelligence. But we have been taught that. We all have. So I'm saying that to say that in Jamaica, they're beginning to keep trying to keep patois in the school system because of some people who are trying to take it out and say, no, you got to teach, quote-unquote, proper English, you see. So all of their rules and regulations and their standards, brothers and sisters, we do not have to follow. And another example, let's leave Jamaica for a minute and let's go over to the island of Haiti. In Haiti, they speak in a form of language called Creole, which is similar to patois in Jamaica. And Creole is not necessarily standard French or just like the French would speak it in France, but it's putting in the culture and the heritage of black people, and we're saying it the way that we want to say it. And those of y'all who watch the news and listen to ABC, NBC, CBS, or listen to some of the sportscasters, all of our colorfulness, all of our ways of speaking and saying things has crept into many white people who are on televisions today. You hear them saying things and using, I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but they use our vernacular and our way of saying things a lot of times, and you know it came from us, you see. So the extent to which Africans have abandoned their languages in favor of the colonizer's language is illustrated by a meeting held at Macquarie University in Kampala, Uganda, in 1962. The meeting was a conference of African writers of English expressions. Ngugi wa Thiong'o was a student at the college at the time and was attracted to the conference by the Nigerian writer Chinua Achebe. The renowned participants of the conference, such as Sida Senghor from Senegal and David Diop, both wrote in European languages. Ngugi wa Thiong'o analyzed the thinking of the writers. He observed that writers using Swahili, Zulu, Yoruba, and other African languages were excluded from the conference. Wa Thiong'o says he was only recognizing with approach and pride, of course, that through all the years of selective education and rigorous tutelage, we had already been fed to accept the fatalistic logic of the unassailable position of English in our literature. The logic was embodied deep in imperialism, and it was imperialism and its effect that we did not examine at Macquarie, meaning the school, is the found triumph of a system. I want to repeat, this is very important. I'm about to read from Ngugi wa Thiong'o here. And just to explain this to make sure you all understand it, he was saying that the conference was held, but people who were speaking African languages were not invited to the conference. If you weren't speaking French or English or colonizer's language, then you weren't invited. Now, Ngugi wa Thiong'o says this. He says that it is the final triumph of a system of domination when the dominated starts singing its virtues. I want to repeat that again. He said, it is the final triumph of a system of domination when the dominated people start singing its virtues. So in other words, when oppressed people start singing the virtues of their oppressors, that's the final triumph. They got us then. And I said, just like I meant to say it, I know I can say it the English way, but I'm saying it like that's what we taught me. They got us. Anytime that we began to express the virtues of our colonizers, our conquerors. One reason for writing and speaking English and French so widely in Africa was for the facility of communication with the colonizer. This is why the colonizer wanted everybody to learn his language so that we could understand his rules and regulations. He could force us around and speak to us in a way, and we could understand. This was deemed for more importance than Africa, than African-to-African communication. To be assured that the languages of Europe would be embraced on a mass scale, the printing press was introduced into African content, and it was controlled by missionary presses, and there were governmental licensing laws that censored certain kinds of material. These missionary presses made sure that pamphlets and books would contain messages of morality and religion for the African masses. Now Europeans could control what was infused into the African mind, both in writing and orally. So I'm away from the book for a minute, so I want to make that clear. Through the invention of the printing press and Europeans printing the kinds of material that they wanted us to have, then this could infuse their thinking into our minds. Europeans also realized that by changing the tongues of African people, the thought processes would change. Books, writing, oral communication, and even the language of conceptualization was foreign. Therefore, thought in African people is foreign. If your languages, if your thoughts are foreign, then your actions will be foreign. Consequently, what exists today are Africans in America and other parts of the world participating in activities characteristic of their culture and heritage, having biblical themes and apolitical discussions, meaning not political, make that clear, introduced early into the minds of Africans through their reading, assured the colonizers of a meek, mild, subservient product. Even today, it is difficult to broach a political discussion with many Africans on and off the continent. They don't want to talk politics because they've been taught. Let's don't discuss politics. I saw that when I was in Africa. I would talk to them. For example, I was in Ghana, and I spoke to some people at the university, and I was asking some questions about the late, great Osagyefo Kwame Nkrumah and the former president of Ghana, and they didn't want to get into Nkrumah and his politics, didn't want to discuss it because they'd been taught to stay away from politics. And when I left America, going to Africa with a group from North Carolina State University, even some of our rules were, don't say anything political while you're in Africa. Don't say anything. But, you know, that saying that to me, that meant nothing, because that's exactly what I did. But they wanted to keep politics out of it, you see. And Carter G. Woodson, in his book, The Miseducation of the Negro, I can't remember what chapter it was. Dr. Rogers may have mentioned it when he was discussing it, but there is a chapter called Political Education Neglected. And he's talking about the fact that through all of our training, all of our schooling, if you think back on it, high school, junior high, we weren't taught to be political or to question the system or to understand democracy as compared to socialism or understand communism or to understand other political aspects of the world in which we live. We weren't taught that, you see. Don't get political. And College G. Woodson has a chapter called Political Education is Neglected. But they want us to get the messages of being moral and religion, and religious. And the reason they want us to be moral and religious and teach us thou shalt not steal or thou shalt not kill is because we would start killing and stealing from them, because look at how they were treating us. So they had to make us moral and meek and subservient. And the Jesus that they gave us was a meek, mild, subservient Jesus. But when you study the history of Christianity and history of Jesus, Jesus was a black revolutionary. I'm stepping out on that one now. Some people might question that, but he's a black revolutionary. And as I begin to conclude for today, and we can see if you got somebody that might ask some questions, clearly language is a central component of one's culture, and culture likewise is a product of one's history. In the learning of culture, a young person is taught to see the world in a certain way. However, once French history, British culture, Portuguese propaganda, were imposed, Africans became alienated from their traditions, for their own traditions and community. One of the Europeans' greatest weapons in the destruction of the African mind was the unleashing of the cultural bomb. Once the bomb is dropped, therein lies the annihilation of the names, language, and total heritage of African people. It becomes more comfortable for the victims to identify with external rather than internal culture. The mind becomes totally immersed in the waters of Europe. Examples are no longer used from African culture and heritage. Only those from white America, England, France are used. Since everything revolves around Europe, every hope and desire for the African is to get to Europe. He wants to travel physically where her mind has been focused, and moreover, when or if they return home, they are more alienated than at first. In short, the mindless victim embraces European culture as his own. And I'm just going to stop right there at that point. The mindless individual embraces European culture as his own, and that's what has happened to us as a people. Our walk, our talk, our dress, our thinking, our drinking, everything has become European, you see. And to those who are tuned in, stay with us, because when I come back next time, I'll be doing, we're going to go into some treatments. Dr. Maxwell said, not solutions. We're going to treat these patients. Patients, we're sick, and we need some treatments. So, Brother Marvin, I'm going to give it back to you now.
I like treatment. That's a great
treatment.
Word.
You like that, too?
Treatment.
That came from Dr.
Maxwell.
Yeah, we're going to treat this patient. He's got cancer.
Thank
we're going to treat it.
Thank you. We need some treatment. We need some triage, right? Help our people heal from their disease states, mentally, physically, emotionally, socially, culturally, and on and on and on. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. Great job. So here's the deal, y'all. 845-277-9250 is the call-in line if you got a question directly for Dr. Bruce. 845, I'll say it slow, 277-9250 is the call-in line. All right. Now, if you want to hit us up on Slido, it is slido.com, and you can put your message in or your question without coming on the line and feeling nervous. You could just send your message in. We got a few messages today, so that's good. So I see y'all trying to get involved, which is beautiful. All right, Dr. Bruce, we're going to go
to
the line.
Oh, I love it. They're trying to get involved through Slido, huh?
If you don't mind, I'm going to see if I can kind of alternate a little bit, and we'll go to the numbers on the call-in line, and then we'll go to a Slido and back and forth. Maybe we'll do it that way. All right. So,
okay, I like that Slido, because this might be some who are not used to talking. Let's slide on over to Slido.
All right, we're going to slide on over to Slido. All right, here we go. The first question is, are missionaries being used today? Are missionaries being used today?
Good question, Doc. Are missionaries being used today in Africa? Yes, they are. Yes, they are. As a matter of fact, let me make it too very clear that just about every religion that you can think of, missionaries are in Africa. Not just Christian missionaries, but you have people from even the Mormons, for example. Mormons are in Africa trying to take the minds of African people, you see, because they know that we are open to our religion, and because we are a spiritual people. As I talked about today in the workshop, we were originally a spiritual people, and our spirituality came from the natural creation and from us studying what the Creator had put around us. But yes, missionaries are still in Africa there. I think T.D. Jakes might have a mission there in West Africa, and some of the other African and many African preachers also are beginning to proselytize. So yes, to answer the question, yes, it's in the past, but it still goes on. I was glad to get that question too. That's good. So they on the computer,
right?
Got another
computer.
One.
They're listening.
Oh, good.
They're coming in. All right. How and why does the white images impact us? How and why does the white images impact us?
From what I understand, Brother Kevin did a good job on that last week, but when you, I'm going to put it the way I'm going to quote W.D. Muhammad on this. He says that when you begin to see God in white flesh, or Jesus in white flesh, and then you begin to see your slave master, he says, then your slave master has the same white flesh or white skin, and so therefore you begin to worship your slave master as you worship your Savior. Since your Savior is your standard, and if your standard is white, then everything that comes down from your standard and looks just like your standard is also superior. If God is superior and you show God or Jesus as white, then everything that you see around you is in that same family of whiteness, and all those people are superior, and then you believe yourself to be inferior, because everyone believes that that God is superior to them, of course, and that you are a child of God, and that God is a father, and so therefore you begin to see yourself as being inferior and not on the same level as white people, because that's the standard that we've been given. So to set a standard like that in the same way, and then there are some people who say, what? It makes no difference what color. You've heard people say that. I'm sure, Doc, you heard that too. They say it makes no difference. Well, since it makes no difference then, since it doesn't matter what color you show Jesus in, take all these white ones down and put black ones up, since it makes no difference. Now, I'm throwing that out, Brother Marvin. That's out here to say, on that one. Since it makes no difference now, go on and put a white, go on and put a black one up. Put a black man up with locks on his head. Since it makes no difference. But we know psychologically it makes a difference. Naeem Akbar's book, Chains and Images of Psychological Slavery, he talks about that. I'm giving some sources because I want to go into some other callers, but Chains and Images of Psychological Slavery by Dr. Naeem Akbar. I talk about it in my book, Recapturing the African Mind, and I'm sure there are several other ones, too, that talk about that. Okay, let's go back to slide. Any more slidos? I like these. See, I like that.
Yeah, got a few more.
So we have been had people that have been listening on a computer, like you've been telling me, right?
Yeah. Somebody said, damn, I didn't know she was named after a slave ship.
Oh, they say, oh, Phyllis Sweet. Somebody said that, huh?
Yeah. Damn, I did not know she was named after the slave ship.
So at least, Brother Marvin.
Somebody's listening.
Huh?
Go ahead, brother.
Pardon me? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
So at least we know that they're learning something, they're being taught. If they don't pick up anything else, they did pick up the impact of slavery and colonization on the minds of black people and on us as a people by naming us after ships. That's exactly right. That's the historical fact. But that's what I'm here for, to give facts and information. So I'm at least they got something from the lectures. They got another one?
Yeah. All right, let's see. Somebody asked, how can the Bible taught from an African Afrocentric view or perspective help our people? How can the Bible taught from an Afrocentric view or perspective help our people? Dr. Buse, can you hear me?
He's not muted, is he?
I'm not sure. Let me see. Well, let's.
Can you hear me now?
You can take that one. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I lost you there for a minute.
Okay, yeah. I was about to say that whenever our people can see ourselves in anything, whether it's in the textbooks, whether it's in the magazines, whether or not it's on billboard signs, whether or not it's in the Bible, when you can see yourself in something, then it lets you know that you were a part of it and that you can become you can do anything you want to do. It inspires you. For example, as somebody said that when they saw, I think the sister from the half Japanese African sister that plays tennis, when she saw and read the story of Serena and Venus, she realized that even though she was a person of color, she could learn and succeed at tennis. So when you can see yourself in anything, it also gives you more reason to want to know about it. Let me give an example. if I take a picture, and I always use this example when I do lectures, if I take a picture, I used to say with a camera, but now I have to say with my phone because people use phones now. But when you take a picture with your phone, and then if you can see yourself in that picture, you're more interested in the picture. Or if you're looking at somebody's photograph book in their home, and none of those pictures in that photograph book are of you or look like you, then you have no interest in it. This is why many of our people have not done well, and maybe sometimes why they sleep in church and don't want to hear what the minister says, because they oftentimes think it has nothing to do with them. But when you can see yourself in anything, you have more interest in it when you can see yourself in it. If you come to my house and I got a book of photographs, and you're waiting on me to take a shower, say we're going out, and you're just looking at a photograph book, and you don't see anybody in that book that you know, you have no interest in it. But when you see, there's so-and-so, that's beside Brother George, or he's beside Dr. Maxwell, he's beside Dr. Rod. So anytime you can see yourself in it, it makes it more interesting. And even people, when I do lectures on STEM, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, I always give the example of, and STEM students are given example of when they see Mae Jameson, or when they see black astronauts, or when they see black scientists or black inventors, it lets them know that they can certainly achieve the same thing. But when you don't see yourself in anything, then you have no interest in it, and you think that you cannot achieve it, you see. So you have to begin, and naturally, and I end this, and naturally, when you see yourself in anything, I repeat, you're going to take more interest in it when you are there or people who look just like you. I remember years ago, as I say, I'm going to complete this answer. Years ago, when we used to look at television, and you had a television, when the Ed Sullivan Show came on, we said, oh, so-and-so is going to be on the Ed Sullivan Show. When we saw somebody black on TV, when black people were not on television as much as they are now, we were interested in it. We wanted to see the program, to see our own people. So it's very important.
All right. All right, the next question is, what's wrong with white Jesus?
What's wrong with the white Jesus?
What's wrong?
He wasn't
white.
First of all, it's a lie. If you want to follow a lie and go along with something that's not true, then you go along with the white Jesus. It's a lie.
All right. How can we use the Bible to recapture our people's minds?
Oh man, I thought I just okay. We can use the Bible to recapture our people's minds by ministers showing or Sunday school teachers showing where we fit as an example. I'll give you a very good example. When you start off talking about the Bible, and as I speak, you all can tell, I come from a lot of sources. Now, I'm coming from Stokely Carmichael. I heard Brother Stokely Carmichael make a statement. He said that when you look at the Bible, the first country ever mentioned in the Bible is Africa. The first country mentioned is Cush, not country. First continent is Africa when they mention Cush in Genesis. So Africa is all through the Bible, you see. So and the question was what now,
can we use the Bible to recapture our people's minds?
Yeah. How can we use it? Okay. A student of the Bible can go through the Bible and look at the chapters and look at the passages in the Bible, look at the books of the Bible, and look for words like Ethiopia, words like Cush, look for words like Philistines and Israel, and understand the geography and know where all that took place, and they can find our people all over the Bible. There's no question about it. We're all through in and throughout there. And, Brother Marvin, as you said too, we're going to, at some point, we're going to get a program on that. And as you see, people really would be interested in it.
All right, next question. This is interesting. Jesus, a revolutionary, can you explain?
Jesus, a revolutionary, can I explain? First of all, he fought against the powers that be. He stood up against the powers that be, and that's revolutionary. And he was against oppression of people. He was about feeding the hungry, and he was about healing the sick. And if they can read, I'm going to give them a chapter they can read too as it comes to my mind.
All right.
the fourth chapter of Luke talks about the Spirit of the Lord is upon me. And he said it has anointed him. Hope y'all are listening now.
Mm.
He said this is that he should give sight to the blind, and he should give liberation theology. And I'm also going to give him another source. I gave him that's Luke. They wanted to show what says he's a revolutionary. Now I gave you a quote there without going to it completely, but also he fought against spiritual wickedness in high places. You see, he's fought against spiritual wickedness in high. He says, "I don't come to fight flesh and blood, but spiritual wickedness in high places." You see, and that's from the Bible. And also, we can find that there are writers like James Cone. I'm giving some sources now, who taught what was called liberation theology. James Cone, C-O-N-E, to those who want to look this information up. James Cone taught liberation theology. And there are several others who taught liberation theology. And Martin Luther King, please remember, was a preacher. And he was preaching the words of Jesus. And you see how it caused him to act. If you look at Brother Nat Turner and how he, when he was on the slave plantation, he said he saw a vision in the sky. And he knew that that was time for him to take action and to get the slave master off his back. And the only book that Nat Turner actually ever read was the Bible, because that's the only one they gave us. Inspiration is there if we would but go into it and pull it out and use it for our benefit. And just to give you another, I give you another example of that. Gabriel Prosser from up in your area, Virginia, he was a preacher. And he also used passages from the Bible when he would, Denmark Vesey, pardon me, not Prosser, I'm getting them, Denmark Vesey in South Carolina. Denmark Vesey would always use passages out of the Bible to teach his followers and for them to use to help them conduct their revolts that they conducted here in America. Okay. Got some good questions today.
Two more.
All these
why
off
do
the
many
slide,
of
huh?
our people? Yeah. Why? Yep. Why do many of our people think that the propaganda of whites is a coincidence and not thought out?
I don't know. If they do an analysis, it's definitely thought out. It is by design. It is thought out. It is constructed. It is concocted or put together in high places to give to the world and for them to remain in rulership. Some people do think, it's well thought out. As a matter of fact, let me give you an example. There's a book called Subliminal Seduction. Can't think of the author right now. And in that book, Subliminal Seduction, it talks about how people who advertisers or how people who are selling foods, they realize that people react to certain colors over other colors, and they get hungry when they ride past a McDonald's or when you ride past a Burger King. They use, and if you notice those franchises, they use basically the same colors. All those restaurants use basically the same colors, and that's because these shrewd manipulators of society, these shrewd people trying to control us, have studied and found that certain colors make our senses become titillated, and we want to go eat a Big Mac. We want a fry and a fish sandwich. And they know that from studying colors. So all this is by design. When you go to the movies, they show those quick flicks on the film between certain frames. They'll show popcorn and Coke. And the next thing you know, you're out at the concession stand. And this is true. And they're both about this. I'm not making this up, brother. We get into a good one today. I like this one. And I'm glad to get this because I was asleep. So I'm glad these Slido people are calling, however they come in on the computer, Slido, sliding in. But, yeah, all this is by design. They know what they're doing. We won't have time to go into it right now. The warrior Queen, the movie by Viola Davis. Don't have time to go into it, but look at it. But look at it with a very analytical eye. Look at it very, very carefully and use your keen discretion in trying to study it and find out what's really going on. Look at the Black Panther movies. They know what they're doing when they give us certain kinds of things, you see.
Mm.
All right, let's have another one.
Okay, we got one more, and then I want to get to some of the calls on the line. If the
Bible
describes
Jesus as
being black,
but I'm glad they're using Slido, so at least
black.
I know you help me. Okay.
If the Bible describes Jesus as being black, why are Christian preachers not speaking on this truth?
Why are Christian preachers not? Now some do. There are some who do speak on it. And others, I think, may be thinking that they might offend the congregation.
Mm.
And all they're used to seeing is the white ones. Some don't know. Some preachers just really don't know, believe it or not. As a matter of fact, at the conference today that I went to, I heard a brother, and he was reading the words of Howard Thurman. That's another name some of y'all might want to look at, Howard Thurman. But he was talking about the Jews. And we know that the Jews were originally black people. Dr. Ben wrote a book called We the Black Jews, you see. So there's a lot of information out there that a lot of our ministers really just don't know. And many of them do not give that kind of information because they think. Now, one minister told me one time, Brother Marvin, Brother George, he said that the picture was in his church, and he said many of the elderly people gave money to have those stained glass windows panes painted, and for him to take them down, there just was no way he could do it. So there's a lot of things involved in that white Jesus, and plus some people just not really ready for it. You got to give them a little bit at a time, a little bit of Cush in Genesis, and then raise them up through Sunday school and try to just. But to just take that Jesus from them all at once is like taking the Christmas tree out of a child's hand who's used to celebrating Christmas. You see?
Wow.
Right. So
true. All right, we got just a few more minutes left, and I want to get to some of the callers on the line. So I'm going to go over to 3347. That's the last four of your numbers. Slido, great job, y'all, for putting those questions in there. 3347, you're up.
Great job for you,
line.
Too, coming up with that idea.
3347. Do you have a question or comment? All right, let's move on down to 8502, you're in. You're up. Do you have a question or comment on today's show?
Good afternoon, Brother Marvin. And
hey, brother.
Brother George, Brother Bridges.
Brother.
This is Herbie White in Durham, North Carolina.
Hey, Brother Herbie.
How you doing? I just want to expand on some of the things Brother Bridges was talking about, African, white control over black people's minds. And like he was saying it when he was arguing with a brother in Kenya about the pictures of Jesus, when you say something like that Jesus is black, then they're going to ask you, where did you learn that? Where did you hear that? And if you don't have a white confirmation, they're not going to accept it.
Mm.
See?
So was it wait, I agree with Brother 100%.
Yeah, it's not.
It's programs like yours, too, that people start listening to these programs and telling other people about them and feeding positive thoughts and ideas in their minds about their own culture and their own heritage, they can eventually grow to question a lot of other things they see in the society. As an example,
true.
And I mentioned this last week, or week before last, whenever it was, I mentioned in a few weeks, Thanksgiving is coming up. Now, we should just analyze it. What happened during the first Thanksgiving? Where were we? What date did it occur? What was your place? Bob Marley says, know who you are and where you stand in the struggle. Where were you in 1621 when the so-called first Thanksgiving was held in America. And look at your dates. We just got here where Brother George and everybody knows we were here long before then, but we got here in 1619. We're just going to use that date on the slave ships. But we know good and well we wasn't sitting down at a table in 2 years later, 1621, eating stuffed turkey, cranberry sauce, and sweet potato pies. You see? So just look at the history. Now, again, I'm not saying don't get with your family and don't have things. I'm not saying that. Enjoy your meal, all that. But just know who you are and where you stand. And as a matter of fact, many Native Americans are beginning to speak out against because of their plight and their condition at the time, as they spoke out a few weeks ago on Columbus Day. Some of y'all may have seen it on the news. Native American and Native Americans are beginning to speak out against the naming of these teams, like the Boston Red Sox and the Cincinnati Reds, and where they changed the Washington Redskins name. So when people get knowledge and become conscious, they will ask questions and begin to stop doing things that they normally would have done without knowledge. Knowledge is the key.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. I'm going to try to get one more in. 7841. 7841. Do you have a question or comment? You're on live. 7841.
Yes. Peace and Hotep. Peace and Hotep.
Hey, how are you doing, sister?
I got it. I'm good. I'm good. Is everyone doing well there?
Yes.
Doing well.
Good, good, good. I wanted to comment on Dr. Bridges' experiences in Africa. As always, he is dead on. They don't talk politics a lot. And they will refute something that you say, especially if it goes against their grain. Because just like us, they were colonized, right? They sat down in a room several hundred years ago and divided up Africa to see who would colonize what. So when we think about what happened to Africans here in slavery, we have to consider that they were also colonized. So absolutely. And there was a conference in the 70s, UNESCO, and one of the major topics was to identify the race of the Egyptians. And Dr. Chikante Diop, he grew up in a French-speaking African country, but they definitely had to speak English and or French to be at that conference. And that was like a real significant break in the understanding of Egyptian history, and it could not be refuted, and those were scholars from all around the world. They don't really talk politics, like you said, but it brought to me a memory that I had when in high school was part of an organization that addressed children in war-torn areas like South Africa, Belfast, Palestine, Israel at the time, and in those children, this theory stands true for today. In those areas where there's war or a significant disparity between classes and stuff, those young people are very aware. They become very, very aware. And if you look at any revolution, any major revolution started with young people, even teenagers, because that's an age and a place where the mind is not fully indoctrinated to anything. And so when they can see
something
wrong,
all right, sister,
wrong,
I gotta wrap
easier.
It up.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
That's it.
But
all right, no worries.
Running
thank
out of time.
Though.
Thank you, though. All right, Dr. Bruce, we gotta wrap it up. Sorry, sister. Great job today on the Slido. Great job, Dr. Bruce, Brother George. Final comments from Dr. Bruce.
All right, just wanted to say I appreciate that sister's call and for her kind of chime in on what I was doing. And we're going to talk about some of those things, too, a little later on. And by the way, those people who might be interested, I do want to mention Brother Terrence Neal is bringing Brother Ashra Kwesi to Durham on next week. And to those who might want more information on that, I'm going to give out a quick number. Hope you got a piece of paper and a pencil. But Kwesi, he's doing a lecture on the African origins of Christianity in Durham, North Carolina. And for information and to get tickets, let me 919-956-5972. That's my number, and I can help you get tickets. And I'm doing this for Brother Terrence Neal, who is promoting Ashra Kwesi in Durham, North Carolina, whose topic is the African origins of Christianity. And some of those questions I was asked today, he'll go into them even further because he used talk for a couple of hours. 919-956-5972. Hotep, Brother George and Brother Marvin.
Hotep.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. That's it for this week. Thank y'all for listening. Keep doing it, y'all. We got this thing. Let's keep working together. Till next week, talk to y'all. Thanks, Brother George, Dr. Bruce, and everybody else. Peace and blessings. Till next week. And share the show with a friend. We got to grow this thing. Peace and blessings.
Peace.